Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 21st, 2003. Today's session is entitled The I Believe in Stuff and Things, Session 1 of Poetry and the Healing Power of Selvage and Detritus, presented by Steve Ringo, number RIS 2003-06. Let's listen in.
And this is session one of Poetry and the Healing Power of Selvage and Detritus, a rather strange title, but I think it might become more clear as we proceed. I have been teaching poetry for 8 years at Whitworth College as a part-time instructor there in the English department. Probably more interesting is I'm most interested in writing. My MFA is in creative writing, and one of the things I love most in the world is poetry. It's a passion of mine. You'll also see another passion of mine that I'm trying for the first time in my life these 2 weeks at Holden to blend, which is poetry and the slides that you'll see and the kind of junk that you see here. I've started within the last 2 years creating what they call assemblages in the world of art, I guess, it's a thing that when I look back, I can see various times in my life where I was interested in stuff and junk and discardables of the world, but I started making things out of them. So by the title, I'm trying to pull together some of these, the words of poetry and the mood and the feelings and the meanings, plus what do these objects of the world do when you pull them out of their previous context and put them into some other space. Welcome, David. Does everyone have one of the handouts?
Yes, I'm up here.
Oh, okay. David, if you see somebody trickling that doesn't see that pile of handouts, you can be a usher for me, please. I'd like to open with a prayer that is printed, and we might use it one of these days, in the Holden laminated four-fold prayer list. I think it's number 25. It has the ignominious title of our prayer number 25 to open this session. Let us pray. Blessed be God, the Creator, and all creative hands which plant and harvest, pack and haul, and hand over sustenance. Blessed be carrot and cucumber, potato and mushroom, tomato and bean, parsley and peas, onion and thyme, garlic and water, and blessed be fire, and blessed be the people working over the stove, and the deer out the open window. And blessed be God for all, for all, for all. Amen. A celebration of all things. I want to start from a place, if you have a creedal background where you perhaps in worship use the creed, shorter version is the Apostles' Creed. How does it start out? Very first words. I believe in God. And the first article of the creed is, this article often sounds kind of intimidating if you haven't thought of the creed in this way, but it's actually very simple. The first article, I believe in God the
Creator.
Okay. So the name of the person in the first article is the Father. I believe in God the Father, right? God the Father. And what does God the Father do in that first article?
Creator.
This is a quick review. Creator. Okay. And the second article, you go on down past the Creator. I believe in Jesus Christ. And it goes on to kind of tell a little bit about what that whole part of our creed what was happening there with Jesus. So the second article, who? Jesus is the who. And what does he do?
Redeem
or save. Okay. Salvation, whatever, return, atonement, all those things. Now, the third article, we won't dwell on this because I know this isn't what you came here for. Who is the who of the third article? And?
The church.
I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church, Catholic meaning universal, right? So the Holy Spirit / church are the who, because the Spirit works its wonders through the church. So the Spirit's presence is the presence of Christ as lived out through the church and the rest of the creation, I think, too, right there. Holy Spirit, church, and doing what? This is the hard one that I always had a hard time with. Always. Yeah.
Sanctify.
Good job. Proud of you, son. Sanctify. Should use the past tense for sanctify. So, today I'm filtering these poems that we have into the first article here, the Creator. The title of the session, I Believe in Stuff and Things. Sounds materialistic, doesn't it?
I'm a Nordstrom guy, or I'm a Nike guy, or I'm a whatever, but it's not about materialism as much as a vision or a way of believing that the Creator God has a passion and a tenderness and a love for the whole creation and a redemption for the whole creation, not just, oftentimes salvation gets to be real truncated as a view of me, us, people, my kind, whatever it is. But salvation really, if you look at the Bible, the whole created order is to be redeemed. That's beyond our reach in this class, but check that one out for 20 years or so. Sanctification, another tougher one, we'll come to that later, but kind of that indwelling and growing and traveling and nourishing oneself along the journey and those around you. So having said that, I want to open to a poem that's toward the back. If you go to the very back page and then turn it one more page in, there's a poem called Ode to Things by Pablo Neruda, a Nobel Prize winner. So it may look like a simple poem, sort of an E.E. Cummings type of poem, and it in some ways is, but I say he's a Nobel Prize winner because, you know, this isn't something just to sneeze at either. But while we're looking at poems today, and if you're here in other days, I put this on the board just as a handy little cheat sheet, if it helps you, to look for, while you're reading any poem, and I do this myself, any poem, look for a line, even just one line that jumps out at you. Where's a line? There should be a line you maybe like. Or what line, which line in that poem seems to be the key line or the most powerful line? You know, where, if the poem has a rising sense of it or a buildup, where does the buildup reach its, you know, peak? And then also key words. Sometimes the key words might not be in that key line either. They might just be there. So look for words that jump out at you. Repetition is very crucial in poetry. Anything that's repeated by the poet, that means the poet's underlining that or exclamation points, you know. So note anytime there's repetition, whether that's a word or an image or a different take on the same image. Look for the surface meaning or the surface event. What's going on the surface of this poem, whether that's a story or a narrative, if it's a lyrical moment where just a lot of poems aren't really a story, but they're lyrical when they take a small little moment, something like when the light bulb went on for you about this or that, and it's an explication of that little moment in time, not in a narrative fashion, but just in a, how does that ripple play out, and how am I feeling about it or thinking about it? A good poem, I think, will blend emotion and thought. A lot of times,
some of the poems that aren't as great or as strong as others will lean more on the thought process, the thinking part of the poem. That's very intellectual, maybe, and maybe it's good, but a real powerful poem will be both the emotion and the thought. Something to say, something for you to chew on, but also some passion about it. And blending those together is one of the magical parts of poetry, in my estimation. There is a lot of poetry out there that does the emotional part too, without much thought, right? It's more mushy, maybe. So check that out as you're reading through too. I'd like to read this one, and I will invite others to read poems as we do some of these in this session and in others. I like to give you chances at that and read them together and discussion. So while we're going through, think about anything that comes to your mind or heart or confusing, clarifying, whatever. We'll talk it through. Ode to things. I have a crazy, crazy love of things. I like pliers and scissors. I love cups, rings, and bowls. Not to speak, of course, of hats. I love all things, not just the grandest, also the infinitely small thimbles, spurs, plates, and flower vases. Oh yes, the planet is sublime. It's full of pipes, weaving, handheld through tobacco smoke, and keys, and salt shakers, everything, I mean, that is made by the hand of man, every little thing, shapely shoes and fabric, and each new bloodless birth of gold, eyeglasses, carpenter's nails, brushes, clocks, compasses, coins, and the so soft softness of chairs. Mankind has built, oh, so many perfect things, built them of wool and of wood, of glass and rope, remarkable tables, ships, and stairways. I love all things, not because they are passionate or sweet-smelling, but because I don't know, because this ocean is yours and mine. These buttons and wheels and little forgotten treasures, fans upon whose feathers love has scattered its blossoms, glasses, knives, and scissors, all bear the trace of someone's fingers on their handle or surface, the trace of a distant hand lost in the depths of forgetfulness. I pause in houses, streets, and elevators, touching things, identifying objects that I secretly covet. This one because it rings, that one because it's as soft as the softness of a woman's hip, that one there for its deep sea color, and that one for its velvet feel. Oh, irrevocable river of things, no one can say that I loved only fish, or the plants of the jungle and the field, that I loved only those things that leap and climb, desire and survive. It's not true. Many things conspired to tell me the whole story. Not only did they touch me, or my hand touch them, they were so close that they were a part of my being. They were so alive with me that they lived half my life and will die half my death. Any impressions? Any little thing or bigger or big? Yes.
Feels like memory.
Okay.
Memory of all these little things, mm-hmm. and whose they were and
mm-hmm.
where they were, and
sure.
we can't even always remember.
Sure.
But we see something and it just triggers something that, oh yes, I saw that. Now who had that?
So it
someplace maybe in childhood even.
Mm-hmm. Almost has a life of its own.
Yes.
Sometimes mm-hmm. becomes something else. like a fish story or something, like fish changes.
It's a very tactile quality to it.
Very tactile.
I mean, I think of carpenters who will feel wood without looking at it, but I mean, there's so many, as you understand, with touch and feel.
It's very sensory and tactile, yeah.
I mean, as opposed to vision or something, or seeing things, you see lots of poems relative to the beauty of things, this one's...
Yeah, I like that.
Softness.
Say that again.
Lots of mentions of softness.
Mm-hmm. Softness. I agree, that's the tactile thing. There was one that reminded me of your, weren't you a harpsichord maker, or did that? Something in here made me think of you doing that. I hadn't thought of it for years, so it's a strange thing that built so many of wood. There it is. Remarkable. Tables, ships, stairways. Sweet smelling, the ocean. There's a union here, too, going on, a oneness thing that kind of comes and goes, where he's talking about his memories and the triggers, things that trigger his affection for the world, but then there's this union that we're all in this ocean together, and then at the end, toward the end of the poem, these things all were a part of my being. The fifth or sixth line up from the very end of the poem, the irrevocable river of things. I like that picture of things as a river flowing. What a clatter, what a jumble, but no one can say that I love only fish. I think there's a little humor here and there too, where he turns a phrase where the line goes like this, and then in the next line he throws something at you that catches you off guard, like, no one can say that I loved only fish. I don't know.
It's also interesting to me, there's no sense of possessiveness in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's no sense that he has to own any of these things.
He mentions company.
Pardon?
He mentions company.
He does mention company.
Where's that?
In the objects very end of the second page. Column,
okay.
On the first page.
There it is. Wow. Coveting, yeah. It's an old-fashioned way of saying it, huh?
There's not a collector's poem.
No. No, I think that coveting is good. I still get the sense he's not possessive about it, though. Just maybe coveting the relationship with it, even. Or coveting more of these memories, more of this kind of intimacy with the things of the world. Have any of you seen the movie Il Postino, the Postman?
Mm-hmm.
Not the Kevin Costner version, but the Italian. It's a fictionalized story based on Pablo Neruda. In exile on an island where the postman or the mail carrier is kind of a simple man and strikes up a relationship with, because he ends up delivering the mail to Pablo Neruda, this world famous poet, and he just admires him to all get out, but ends up striking up some conversations, and then they meet on the beach and have a little bathe in the ocean, and there's some really good things to this kind of idea that comes through the movie, and the celebration of love and human love and the world, and what is a metaphor. He teaches this simple postman kind of how to see the world in metaphorical ways. Tomorrow there's a poem that we'll get at that's called How a Metaphor Can Save Your Life, which is kind of tongue-in-cheek in the how-to sort of idea of a how-to book or a self-help kind of book. But it's actually a powerful poem about, and I think the title is misleading because the poet really means to save your life, that this can, it's a way of seeing that can save us from other ways of seeing that get narrower and narrower and maybe have some deathly results or premature death or formaldehyde kinds of death. So.
Well, I didn't see that he wanted to possess things, but I got a real feeling of possessiveness in a way, of the love and the
mm-hmm.
that he has for all these things. I thought of that as a way of possessing.
Okay.
Okay. Very close to him.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't give him up lightly, probably, huh? Yeah. Maybe attached to also. And this
it's
is the semantics thing, huh?
Yeah.
Part
of his life. When in his life did he write this poem? Because having been gotten in trouble in Chile and then having to be exiled
mm-hmm.
because of the
I
nature
would have
of some
to
of
look.
Poetry,
in fact, when the session's over, help me look. It's in here.
That he's
this copyright
that,
is.
That things and memory would be very important to him because there were disruptions in his life.
The copyright's 94, so
that's
yeah, and that could just be.
It's a recent.
It doesn't mean he wrote it in 94. I think he was already. Year did he die?
I don't remember when. He wrote a lot of poetry about nature, though, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. A lot of natural energy, you bet.
Yeah. I was thinking about what it's like to go into an antique store and see
mm-hmm.
all these little things. And sometimes when I do that, I have this sort of feeling of sadness about these are all, things that people have
right.
or loved and
uh-huh.
now they're disconnected from them. But this kind of shifts that view and this is more the texture of human life. And
mm-hmm. That's an interesting
I hear that here though too, like he's trying to reclaim that. I think
yeah.
it feels that same thing.
Yeah.
The trace of someone's fingers on
yeah.
the handle of the service, you know.
Right.
Where
the story
has to that story.
What are the stories connected
to good
stuff?
You know? I like the way you said that. So and then the reclaiming is something we'll, and you can't avoid it now, and you can't separate these three articles, but tomorrow's focus is on that reclaiming idea in a more focused way, too. And that there are ways that I think things and stuff can be redeemed, too. Let's go next to page 7, which is not numbered, but it's the...
I have a question
yeah?
on this poem before
sure.
I move on. The part on the 1, 2, the 3rd column over, about midway down.
Yes.
It says, because this ocean is yours and mine, these buttons and wheels and little forgotten treasures, fans upon whose feathers love has scattered its blossoms. I have a hard time with that. I can't think of that. Fans upon whose feathers love has scattered its blossoms. Fans.
A fan, like old style, where you fan yourself, maybe?
Upon whose feathers, oh, like a feather fan.
The made of feathers is
feathers.
What I took it
fans
as.
Fans upon yeah. whose feathers, love has scattered its blossoms.
Yeah.
Love has scattered its blossoms on the feathers of the fan.
Yeah, it's a little, it gets a little harder.
That blows the petals.
Mm.
All right. But it's kind of a romantic image.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's think of fans as being kind of a seductive thing.
Right, yeah. Yeah, some of the old Egyptian, the big fan. But yeah, I think it's a little, it's not as clearly, doesn't jump out at you, some of the other lines do, I agree.
Yeah.
It takes more kind of explicating there. Just
there's the ocean and then the river.
Right.
Later on, the river of things.
Uh-huh.
This ocean that she was in mine.
Yeah.
The water image there.
And he repeats the water image too, even when he's saying that, I didn't love just the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Get it in there too.
Yeah. The scissors is repeated too. He must really like scissors because they show up in the early part of the poem and then again later.
Yeah.
Scissors. God bless the scissors. This book, if you want to, I have it on reserve in the library. All of these books will be on reserve, and I've told all the classes thus far that if you come and ask me personally and you want to take it to your room or borrow it for a day or two, that's fine too. Just let me know verbally, because sometimes you don't want to sit in the library and take it with you. Ask for motor oil, and say ask for poetry. Okay, so turn to page 1 back, 1 toward the front, sorry. And I'd like to do the one that's at the top left there. Perfect. On the western seaboard of Southwest, I think is pronounced. Would anyone like to read the poem?
Yeah. On the western seaboard of Southwest, los muertos abren los ojos a los que viven. I found a pigeon skull on the matcher and the bones pure and white and chalky, but perfect, without a crack or flaw anywhere. At the back, rising out of the beak, were domes of bubbles of thin bone, almost transparent where the brain had been, that fixed the tilt of the wings.
Okay, a little moment, right? There he is on this beach. The machair is a type of bird. I think, I looked this up and couldn't find it in the smaller dictionary. Could you look it up for me?
Sure.
The pigeon is the bird. So he leads you up to the last line, doesn't he? And the title of the poem comes right there and just before the middle. It's kind of a thing of death, but beauty. The beauty in this death and the imagination he attaches to it. What does he think about when he thinks of this brain that is gone, where the brain had been, almost transparent, domes of bubbles, thin bone, that fixed the tilt of wings? No?
Picturing that bird when it was alive and it was flying and the wings were tilted into the wind.
He's imagining this bird in its own, you know, you could just walk by a bird on the beach, a dead bird, it happens a lot, and sort of, it's discardable, it's dead, it's useless, it's just a dead bird. Even in the reading for breakfast, I think it was this morning, but, or was it lunch, the sparrow says two for a penny, these sparrows. It wasn't in the littler dictionary either. But the value of this bird, and he's investing it with the creator's kind of care, I think, that he's marveling at this beak, this bone, this transparency, this brain, and then the tilt of wings. How, what a miracle, what a mystery. How did it do that? Fairly simple poem, really.
It's almost like evoking like the soul of the bird.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
And the part in Spanish says, the dead open their eyes to those who live.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Why in the world did he put that one line in Spanish?
Spanish always sounds better.
Yeah. It is a beautiful language,
the
yes.
The dead open their eyes
to those who live. Yeah.
Do we need to keep these?
Yeah. This is yours.
Actually, The dead open the eyes to those who live. I guess it implies that it's the dead's eyes, but I think it's both of them.
Yeah. So the examples, the poem's an example of the Spanish part. Yeah,
I think that's, I wrote, not a poem like this, but a poem like this once when I was at the middle of the night, couldn't sleep, sitting next to the aquarium, saw some light from the outside, there's 5,000 fishes on it. There's just an image that just came like that. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote something about that image. And that's the very strong thing I have about this is that first line, you know, I'm on the beach and he's had this almost prophetic sort of insight, you know, that the dead open their eyes to those who look, you say, those who look.
Yeah, what I think it means is the dead open the eyes of those who are alive. They make those who are still living realize what's happening.
All sorts of things.
That's the spiritual insight, and the rest is just how he got there.
Yeah.
But you wrote this in like 8 seconds.
So the Spanish makes sense then. If that's kind of the spiritual insight, it's like a different language.
Yeah, the language reveals the other language. I like that. Very good. Now let's skip, go back to 2 more pages to a blessing. When I did these last week, I realized I had way more far more poems than I could cover in the hour I'm given, so I came up with a different plan of attack, so we'll see how that goes too. Let's do a blessing first, and then we'll go to blackberry pickings. This kind of fits with the season.
Anyone care to read blessing?
Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bound softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture, where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slender one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear. That is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom.
Reminds me of Martin Luther saying, where he talked about, said something like, if I could comprehend a grain of wheat, I would die of wonder. What was it? Was it an apple seed or a grain of wheat? It was a grain of wheat. I would die of wonder. It's that intricate. It's like the brain of that bird, a blessing. The title gives you a real clue here. This experience, this moment, was a blessing. Why? Maybe. What? What happened? What brought him this blessing and his friend?
I think he did step out of his body for a second.
Pardon?
I think he did step out of his body for a second.
Yeah, I think so. There's several allusions to boundaries in the poem. I think the first one comes right in the first line, just off the highway. Okay? So right away, you're just off the highway. And he locates you very particularly in space. The creator's place, the world is touchable, tangible stuff. Right away, you're here, just off the highway. Twilight. And he personifies twilight like it's almost a deer. That's deerifies twilight. It's not person, it's animalized, right? So the twilight has a life of its own, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. I like the mix of the dark and the light, and then they have come gladly out of where? The willows, some stand of willows, another boundary. So he's off the highway, they come out of the willows, there's a meeting about to happen. To welcome my friend and me. Now, doesn't he imagine part of this? Like the guy imagined the bird's tilt of flight and wings? There's a work that's involved of the imagination, or a way of seeing, if you will. Doesn't have to be imagination. Sometimes the word imagination makes us think it's all pretend. Well, maybe it's just a way of seeing. Anyway, we step over the barbed wire. Now he goes deeper. It's a new world again. We step over the barbed wire into this new world, the pasture, where they have been grazing all day alone. They were alone, right? They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness. Now that's personification, isn't it? He's putting a human emotion into the deer, I mean the horses. That we have come. They bow shyly. As wet swans, I love the wet swans. They love each other. It's so simple. Are you familiar with William Stafford? Any of you, an Oregon poet who I think writes in a similar way? He died about maybe 8 years ago now. William Stafford was kind of like a Henry Nouwen of poetry and American voice of writing about these deep down things that in a very simple, approachable, understandable, accessible way. That's a gift. It's very hard to do, but they make it look so easy. And then that sorrowful, almost sorrowful line, there is no loneliness like theirs. But it doesn't sound sad when it comes right after their happiness and the way they love each other. It's like maybe even solitude, I don't know, at home. And then the imagination goes deeper. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. So particular, so particular. Slenderer one, nuzzle. What a word, nuzzle. know, it's even fun to say, isn't it? Try to nuzzle somebody pretty soon. It's an assignment. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead. And the light breeze that was bounding on the grass with the twilight, moves me to caress her long ear. So it's, again, it's an imagined thing. But it almost becomes a real thing, doesn't it? When you read the poem, you feel like he did this, like it all happened. Delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. In the poem we read previously, what was it? The softness of a woman's hip. Similar. You read them back to back and you can't help but connect those two things. Suddenly, I realize. Yeah, I like the way you said that, that he did. Maybe he did break into blossom. He did. Something blossomed here, didn't it? Something changed, something happened. And it isn't just pretend. If you see the world this way, it changes the way you see the world. And it isn't a pretend thing anymore. It's you being a creature in the creation. It's you participating at another level in that creation. And it's the first article of God that gives us the ability and the wonder and the power and the awe to step out of our own narrow egos and minds and bodies to do that. And it's more about letting go than about, if you try to make this happen, it's almost doomed to fail. It's like the grace of God, it comes, and you need the antennas. We need the way of seeing or the antennas to catch it, because we miss it so often. How many times have I missed all these things? It's shameful for me to think about how much I've missed. But, what do you do?
It'd be easier if you let it hold it all the time. Yeah.
But then wouldn't it become ordinary?
Pardon me?
Wouldn't it become ordinary up here then, too?
Wouldn't it become ordinary?
If you were here all the time,
I just really have a hard time believing that.
I think we did not see the ordinary. It's that, like that line about the color purple in the field.
Yeah.
We miss all these wonderful things constantly. We just take the time to look.
I've been in Spokane for 19 years. I think I spent 9 years fighting it, that thinking Spokane. I grew up in Seattle, and it was this grand city, and I just loved Seattle. And I didn't go to Spokane. I had actually traveled around the world before I ever went to Spokane once, the first time. Mm-hmm. And I finally have fallen in love with Spokane. And there's little places where I could be a booster or a tour guide for Spokane. There's little places where none of the tourist brochures tell you to go there, but I say, you gotta do this, go here. There's some great, in your own hometown. Mm-hmm. And I think so many people have never bothered to really get to know their own hometown, in ways that take you down to the deeper, this blessing level.
I don't have to do with this thought, but as we've been talking, the personification, you're so shameless. I mean, it's so radical and so shameless.
It is.
But it's almost like that blossom of self, that bursting, that personification has to do with somehow extending himself. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of that with the made in the image of God sort of thing. It's sort of that same sort of creative image exploding. Into the creative world. I don't have to do with that.
I love the phrase, image explosion. That's good. Yeah. I think it is. I think that's there, and it draws the idea of this oneness with these creatures and with this creation and the whole world. That's the healing, We talk about healing this summer. It's an overarching theme that this kind of relatedness and relationship with nature and with the whole order, not just the natural world of, Ansel Adams type of stuff, but all of it, that will heal us. That can be a healing thing to see.
I have problems with that because personification is almost arrogant.
It is.
And that's why I have problems with the juxtaposition of that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to miss what a pony is because I'm trying to make it into my little pony or something like that, but
I agree. It is.
But
respect what you're saying very much, and I understand that.
But don't you think that's just a tool to communicate to me what he felt, rather than personifying it to bring it to a person, you know, to make a person rather than a horse? I see it more, that's his way of communicating to me his feelings about that. Yeah, because I can understand that, or I can't really understand horses, maybe.
Yeah, there is a bit of paternalism in there too, the affection. Maybe it's mutual, maybe it's, you know, the nuzzling and the, you could say it's a little, you know, fatherly or something, I don't know. But I still love the poem and what he's saying.
That's what horses do. They want to come over and they want to sniff you and nuzzle. And it's curiosity and maybe there's some affection there.
Yeah. I wonder if the horse is such an ancient creature as relates to humankind. The mythology of horses connected to people would be an interesting study. An intimacy there that goes, you know, back to war and soldiering and all sorts of modes of travel and whatnot. But we should move on. And we'll get even fewer things accomplished here. I shouldn't say accomplished, but we'll cover fewer poems than we did last week. So. Blackberry Picking by Seamus Heaney, Irish. Probably Ireland's premier poet nowadays. Late August, given heavy rain and sun for a full week, the blackberries would ripen. At first, just one, a glossy purple clot among others, red, green, hard as a nut. You ate that first one, and its flesh was sweet, like thickened wine. Summer's blood was in it, leaving stains upon the tongue and lust for picking. Then red ones inked up, and that hunger sent us out with milk cans, pea tins, jam pots, where briars scratched and wet grass bleached our boots. Round hay fields, cornfields, and potato drills, we trekked and picked until the cans were full, until the tinkling bottom had been covered with green ones, and on top, big dark blobs burned like a plate of eyes. Our hands were peppered with thorn pricks, our palms sticky as bluebeards. We hoarded the fresh berries in the byre, but when the bath was filled, we found a fir, a rat-gray fungus glutting on our cache. The juice was stinking, too. Once off the bush, the fruit fermented. The sweet flesh would turn sour. I always felt like crying. It wasn't fair that all the lovely canfuls smelt of rot. Each year I hoped they'd keep, knew they would not. I got to do garbology a couple days ago too, and it was fun because I didn't think it was going to be fun right away, but we stood around in about five of us around a big wooden tray that had a lip on it like that, maybe 4 feet by 4 feet, and one by one we'd take a bag of the garbage that had been collected all over the village, so all the garbage from the village for that day, from the day before, and they'd dump it out and we'd go for burnables, compostables, landfill, and what's the fourth one? Recyclables. And it was just fascinating what you saw. You had thick gloves on and all that. And the smells, the sensory, the tactile, colors. And then after that, we took the compostables up the hill where we smush it and chop it and stir it and throw some plywood or plywood shavings in there and blah, blah, blah. It was a moment of, you know, connected to the earth. What about this poem? There's some of that rot, isn't there?
sour, turning sour, rotting, a rat gray fungus. The wine, you know, what does wine do? Wine is a process of turning sour, isn't it? Fermenting.
I think there's a sense of sorrow at his grief.
Yeah, I agree. I always felt like crying. Death and life, maybe too. Probably it's part of what he's touching on. Each year I hoped they'd keep, knew they would not. I think there's some lessons in dying, or that, you know, someday I'm gonna rot. Someday, you know, my life will turn toward that. You know, what, at what point is your high point of your own life? At what point? I'm 48 now. Am I past my halfway point already? Probably, who knows? Probably. But we don't know that, do we? At what point do we start to turn back to the ground from which we came?
This is kind of a kid's poem, too. I mean, I see it in, from the eyes of a child.
Sure.
We want that blackberry summer to last forever.
Right. Okay, I like that. That's a good way to say it.
He also has this sense of, like, he's killing, he's taking too much. He's got this, our palms are as sticky as bluebeards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's going around killing his wives.
I don't know. It's nasty, Paul.
Yeah,
I don't like it. It starts with clot. I don't like the word clot.
Okay.
It doesn't work. Blackberry is not like a purple clot to me. I guess I'm married to a midwife, that doesn't work. Sorry. What can I say? And then you go to, I mean, the blood, blackberry.
It's,
I mean,
bloody. Yeah.
The rat gray fungus is just terrible. That's a nasty poem all the way through. I don't like it.
Sort of the psychotic addiction.
No, I thought bluebeards was a flower, too.
So did I. I
took it as a bluebeard, as a flower, but.
I heard the blood.
Yeah.
Bluebeard and blackberry.
So the Arabian Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Well, see, that's funny because I just thought totally differently. I just was delighting in the whole first section of this poem because every August we go blackberry picking. My nieces come up from LA and this is the big treat. They come up to go to camp, but I take them for 3 days before camp and we go blackberry picking. And it is a glossy purple clot. That first berry, and it's so ripe and it's just ready to burst, and you put it in your mouth, and it's just almost like blood. It's just so rich and sweet. And you can hear the clicking in the pan of the berries as you fill them up, and the wet feet. And
you're scrunching your legs and your boots.
Yeah, and it's I thought it invoked blackberry picking to me. But I can see now what you're saying is those words are kind of scattered along that first stage, kind of setting you up for the change of emotion.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He picked too much.
I like the word clot as a very Anglo-Saxon kind of word.
Clot.
This is making me remember a time when I must have been about 7 or 8. Just the age of my little boy now, when I got an orange in my Christmas stocking, and it was kind of a treat, and I wanted to keep it, you know, I wanted to keep it forever, and it started rotting and got fuzzy, and I think that was the first time I'd ever had that experience of that biological decay, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in that way you can also kind of get into, you know, a little bit of greed here and wanting to keep it all and money and hang on to it.
Childhood, like David said,
And you have lust for picking, hunger that sends us out. Just picking until your cans are full, thorn pricked, sticky with blood.
I'm looking at this a whole different way.
I think it's blended. I think it's mixed.
It's both.
That's my feeling. And
just depends on who you're eating.
Sure. And what you, how you want to see it too, and what, how you receive it. But
I think it is both.
There's the wonder, the beauty, and the youth and the old, the
foreshadowing of death, but there's the pain and the finger prick and the sour and the bitter and the, all of it. I think it's all in there.
You have to look for key lines or phrases.
Yeah.
But I always felt like crying puts it back into childhood memory.
Yeah, it does.
And it seems like that's where it comes from. But then that's why I ask, well, but the words, blood, clot, that's not childhood memory, that's the words that you describe it now.
Sure.
Which to me, the feel for me is of this traumatic childhood memory of the orange, you know, riding in the stocking, that sort of.
Yeah.
That,
I think he's looking back, I do.
It's pretty graphic. I think licorice too, I know what you're talking about. I would use those words.
And going beyond that, it can be like a metaphor for life. Well, it is for life and death. But,
sure.
You know, that you've got the good with the bad. You've got the first sweet taste and the summer's blood. It's just like both of it. That's very good.
And it doesn't work. Each year I hope they would keep, I knew they would not.
Yeah.
It's the same thing over.
That's true.
Can't you say that I finally got it right this summer? And only pick it up for a pie? Share it with the neighbors.
Yeah, okay. The next poem is a blackberry pie recipe.
Yeah.
But that's something about berries. You want to use them right then. You can't. You've got to make that pie or eat them. Or
true.
They won't last.
Anything fresh, yeah. I want to show you some of these slides, and then we'll close with another couple of poems. But. I touched on it. I've started to collect stuff, and my son and I go out and find things, and I tend to put in industrial lots and burned up. There was a transmission shop that burned down, and I found some stuff. And obviously up at the third level up at the top of the mine in Holden, there's a lot of stuff. Last week I took a group up there, maybe on a Wednesday, anybody that wanted to go just looking for any kind of salvageable items that might be appealing to your eye. If you're interested, that's fine. We'll stay tuned on that, but I'm shooting sort of for Wednesday. These are just some things I found in the last 2 or 3 days, and I haven't made anything or assembled, but just to show you how sometimes somebody's eye might work. So these are all from up in the mine. And this little thing here, I found that on top of an old bulldozer. I actually had to take the top of it was covered with a deal. And it's partly a reclamation task, but more so just finding shapes and textures and colors that appeal to the eye. And so I want to show you some of those images. I finished my MFA in 91, I guess, and written poems, but I've really crossed over. A friend of mine who's a painter actually came to my house about a year ago and was walking through my garage where I make this junk, and he said, "You've really crossed over. You're probably not writing much anymore." He sort of felt guilty, sort of like, "You're probably not writing much anymore. You're supposed to be writing." But and it was really true. I still kind of dabble in poems when they show their head and want to come out, but I've really gone to making stuff as a passion. So I want to share that with you just visually and show you some of what that is. Just partly connect back to these themes here and to some of the poetry and the healing idea too. So thanks for David, could you get the line for me too there? And David Brower-Reedy is going to get the lights. Thank you. Now, I don't have any pretensions about greatness or equality or any kind of continuum of that, but I just have had a good time making some things. I've also made about 5 different chess sets from various, mostly rusted or odds and ends of things. So those have actually sold, so I kind of made enough money to buy or make, or I go through lots of materials just to make these things. So I don't want to talk a lot about them, and just show you. It's about 1.5 feet by 1 foot.
This one's maybe 3 feet by 3 feet. So it's heavy. An old hat box on a Lazy Susan with a rusted piece of metal in the middle.
What did you call this type of art again?
In the art world, they call it assemblage.
Assemblage.
A-S-S-E-M-B-L-A-G-E. It's a French word. Or assemblage.
Mm-hmm.
Assemblage. Probably if you know the art world, Robert Rauschenberg is one of the leading kind of figures for the last 40 years in doing this kind of thing, and also Joseph Cornell. Found objects, basically. That's about 4 feet high by 2 feet. And see, this is a putty knife. That's just, I fell in love with this putty knife. It was so gone. It was just peeling like an onion skin. It was just so rusted out. An old fuse box there. I can't quite get it to focus just right, but maybe it's out of focus a little bit. It's a character from a Japanese no play inside an old waffle iron case. I don't expect people to like, this is not what people want over their sofa. I fully understand that. And sometimes my kids think I'm really gone overboard, but. Maybe about 9 inches wide. It's some kind of a part from a diesel truck brake. That was way gone to rust.
Which does it?
Yeah, the bottom part. The top part is from that transmission shop that got burned out, from the desk lamp. Turn that over. That was part of a desk lamp. Mm-hmm. So most desk lamps aren't that beautiful, but mm-hmm. I found the combination beautiful. So, what do you call it? A metal polishing brush in the middle, on the inside.
It's got a blade from.
Pardon?
It has a blade from something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fan, an old fan. Inside an old Coleman stove, camping stove case. I tend to be fairly minimal, so I don't get very detailed too often.
The pattern that rust has left.
Yeah, I love to see what nature paints on things. Is the time and erosion and fire and water and sand and all the grease and what they do as a canvas to the object, I find fascinating. This was my September 11th mm-hmm. effort. The spring-like contraption is from the guts of an old adding machine. Susan Sontag is a social commentary kind of cult writer about our culture, I guess. Old telephone. The pliers. You know, people give you these pliers because if they're sitting around somewhere and you find the worst quality that you can. If you're at Salvation Army or something, they'll just about give it to you. I go to a congregation that's named St. Mark's in Spokane, and the Griffin is the
symbol of the Gospel of St. Mark. So I kind of actually gave this one to the church, and they even put it somewhere, which was even more nice. Probably take it down when I get out of town. That's okay, too. A couple of waffle irons. That's the lid of the waffle. Actually the underside. Those are, you know, maybe 16 inches square each one. The plates actually come from Pottery Barn. They were selling salad plates with these dice images on them. It kind of caught my eye. This is the last one. They were going to get rid of give it to Goodwill, the service, the altar book from the old red hymnal at St. Mark's in Spokane. And I said, I want that. It's just got this, all this nice red and gold handwork or whatever it is. And the Psalms have the red letters and the black letters, and some of it's kind of almost it's a cool book, but I wanted to use it. And being a pastor's son and growing up on the red hymnal, and you can open this to any page, and I made it so you could kind of keep it open, get this by my front door at home. Beloved in the Lord, draw us near. Almighty God, our Maker and Redeemer. I heard that. I probably missed church twice or thrice in my first 16 years of life. So I just was so drilled into me. And in later life, it became kind of nostalgic, but also confessional. So just having some fun with that one.
Did you write on the page?
I did. I wrote right here. Wherefore we flee for refuge to thine infinite mercy. Part of that confession. My favorite part. Something I gotta always do. It's an old baker's flower drawer from a baker's desk. The baker's drawers are always nice and shallow, so you don't have such a deep thing. I love the way nature did the mottled effect on this hammer. It's almost like it's a fungus or something. Jacob Lawrence, image of a Negro Leagues pitcher. Kind of a triptych of sorts. Gauges are always fun. I just get a lot of pleasure from gauges. I had to cut up that baseball to fit it into the old camera lens. Old camera lens. Ball peen hammers are my favorite, but this one was kind of nice too. There's that same one, only on a black background. And this thing actually flips up. Some of the objects you've seen are movable, where I encourage people to move it or turn it or click it or click or whatever. So they kind of invite you to have a little touchy, you know, touching, whatever. Burned out fuse. So, just to give you a little idea of how I'm trying to connect this word detritus and salvage and the lost castaway, and in our culture, how much we are such a materialistic culture, and I think how can we save what we do have without always having new stuff, you know, I've got to have a new thing. And I really think it was Augustine who said that our day of creation is the eighth day of creation, where God created on six, you know, the 6 days of creation, and then what did God do on the seventh day? He rested. But then ours is the eighth day of creation, as Augustine called it, that we have these materials that the Creator made, that, like the wisdom writer says, there's nothing new under the sun. We don't make anything new, but we are recreators. We recreate any combination of things that already has been made by God. That's the new creation. That's the eighth day of creation is what we make, if it's some recombinant kind of thing that can be new, whether that's a phrase or a sentence or an idea or a feeling in a poem, a combination of those. Probably these poems never existed together before. You know? An editor can put together poems that never were put together before. Ever. Maybe Seamus Heaney never was on the backside of Charles Wright. So you have that kind of creativity at your fingertips, or finding things, or making a harpsichord, or playing an instrument, or whatever you do. But those are the eighth day of creation things. Those are the first article things we get to do in this amazing but kind of dying world too. The amazing is there, like the blackberry picking, but the dying is there. The healing is possible. The destruction is very real too, of what we do to the planet and to each other and whatnot. Let's see if we can get one more poem in here. Anybody have a request?
Maybe Dickinson. Unless someone else had another one.
Say it again.
Dickinson.
Oh yeah, good. Let's do that. Would you care to read it?
Sure.
Where?
It's on the right in the dead center. Dead center on the right hand side of that page.
How the old mountains drip with sunset. How the hemlock burn. How the dun break is draped in cinder by the wizard's sun. How the old steeples hand the scarlet till the ball is full. Have I the lip of the flamingo that I dare to tell? Then how the fire ebbs like billows, touching all the grass, with a departing sapphire feature as a duchess passed. How a small duck dusk crawls on the village till the house is blocked, and the old flambeau no man carried glimmer on the street. How it is night in nest and kennel, and where was the wood? Just a dome of abyss is bowing into solitude. These are the visions flittered Guido, Titan, never told. The Moncino dropped his pencil, paralyzed with gold.
Very good, thank you. What impressions come at you? I love the old mountains drip with sunset. Mm-hmm. Think of Holden when I hear that one.
How this woman can use words.
Mm-hmm. The natural world and the relationship of the people within that natural world.
Seems sort of like the end.
Yeah. There is an end times feel to it, huh? The fire and the dark. But maybe every day is kind of an end time too. The ancient Egyptians felt that. That Isis and Osiris mythology, that every day is the dying and rising of the earth and the gods, and kind of primitive, but there is a sense where it's a little death each day.
How the small dust crawls on the village. Mm-hmm. Just see that.
Isn't that nice?
The blot
is like clot, huh? See, there's a connection we can make that maybe nobody's ever made that connection with Seamus Heaney and Emily Dickinson, between blot and clot.
There's probably a blackberry bush behind the house.
There you go. I think you're onto something. Touching all the grass, is it flambeau or flambeau? Whatever. French speakers in here.
What does that mean, odd flambeau?
I think it has to do with carrying the torch around. They used to light the gaslight street lamps. Mm-hmm. But I could be off on that. Somebody got another theory on.
No man carry. And the odd flambeau, no man carry. Glimmer on the street. I don't understand that.
The light of the torch still glimmers.
But then it was. Yeah, that doesn't make sense either.
Mm-hmm.
I like the dome of the wood. The wood is no longer individual trees. The great trees is just one big dark dome. It's all silent solitude.
Well, I need to wrap things up because there's another instructor coming in, but I want to thank you for being here and participating. I'm very much keen on participation, and I like to share. I think so much happens when poetry is shared and discussed, and when there's more than you can ever handle, that's a good problem. But if you every day we'll have a little handout based on the various themes, so. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And have a good rest of your day.